Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Before we get started, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge what is going on right now in our country. I think it's important that as a society, we are all taking time to reflect, to listen and support and educate ourselves on the struggle and the history of Black people in this country. As someone who is not Black, I'm looking to the people around me in my community, friends, and taking their lead. I think that many white people, as well as non-Black Latinos and Asians and other people of color that are not Black, are looking around and not knowing what to do. And they're scared of saying the wrong thing or getting it wrong to the point of paralysis. But I know myself that I'm trying really hard to push through that, which means that I'm probably going to mess up. But like they say, if you're not messing up, then you're probably not actually trying. So I encourage everyone to donate to causes and to show your support by taking active measures. I know that I am doing that, and Chris and Amanda are also doing that. And we're going to include in the show notes links to some organizations that we feel strongly about, and in case you're interested in knowing, we'll also be posting them on our Instagram page. So we are going to be releasing the episodes that we had planned, but just know that we are working on some new episodes and are trying to be very socially conscious. So if you have any recommendations, please forward them to us. And now let's go to our interview with Susan Wells. She is the author of Amelia Earhart, The Thrill of It. She's going to talk to us about the disappearance of Amelia Earhart. Let's hear what she has to say. So I was thinking we could just get started with having you tell us a little bit about Amelia's upbringing.
Well, Amelia was born in Atchison, Kansas, but she lived in lots of other places, including Kansas City, Des Moines, St. Paul, Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles. And as a kid, she was fearless and a real tomboy. She loved playing baseball and football, exploring caves, collecting bugs. And her mother always encouraged her freedom and sense of adventure. For example, she made a baby book for Amelia. And inside it, she wrote that, quote, "Shakespeare has no heroes. He has only heroines."
Wow.
Yeah. She was always raised to be very much her own person. Her father also encouraged her sense of adventure. He was a lawyer who worked for the railroads, and that's why they moved so much. But when Emilio was a teenager, unfortunately, he became a major alcoholic, and his problems broke up the family.
What kind of adversity did Emilio face trying to become a pilot?
Well, that's an interesting question. When Emilio took her very first flying lessons in 1921, there were definitely more male pilots than females. But aviation wasn't at all closed to women. In fact, Emilio's first flying teacher was a woman. And there was even a Pacific Coast Ladies Flying Derby that year. So women pilots were in the news, and they were actually attracting a ton of attention. In 1922, both the L.A. Times and the New York Times wrote articles about Emilio, an attractive student flyer who was piloting her own airplane. And then in 1923, when she got her pilot's license, she was only the 16th woman in the world to do so. For the rest of her life, she was passionate about getting more women to fly. But I can't say that she actually experienced sexist adversity when she was trying to become a pilot. The airfield actually seems to have been a pretty friendly place that was really all about flying and the love of flying, much more than about gender.
What do you think, did Lindbergh, did he really kind of push Emilio to try to go outside of her comfort zone, or was it just part of what was happening at the time?
I think it's part of what was happening at the time. Of course, Lindbergh's flight was a huge impetus for all kinds of pilots to try to do all kinds of crazy things. But interestingly, there were lots of women who were trying to replicate that flight across the Atlantic and to become the first woman to do so. It was a really big deal, and there was a lot of money at stake. And women died trying to do it. So when Emilio was recruited to make the first flight by a woman across the Atlantic, she was recruited to do so for publicity purposes. And, of course, there were going to be, you know, book opportunities after that. It was a very, very big deal. So women flyers were very much in the news and doing all kinds of very dangerous things.
Wow. So that's kind of cool. So Emilio and her husband, George J.P. Putnam, had an unconventional relationship, especially for the time, him being her manager and publicist in the beginning. What was their relationship like, and how involved was he in orchestrating her last grand adventure?
Well, her husband's name was George Putnam, and everybody called him G.P., and he was a publisher. And he had made a career out of publishing real-life adventure books by famous people like Charles Lindbergh. He was also an avid adventurer himself. Then in 1927, he discovered Emilio, this woman pilot who was living in the Boston area, and decided to invite her to be the first woman to cross the Atlantic Ocean by airplane. And then after she did that successfully, Emilio became an international star, and he became her manager and publicist. He also became her lover, and they got married in 1931. But it's important to note that Emilio never really wanted to get married. She really thought that it was just like a cage. And right before she got married to GP, she wrote him a letter saying, in effect, that they would have to have an open marriage. He married her anyway, and the relationship definitely had its ups and downs. And I think, bottom line, she married him because her career depended on him. And as far as his involvement in orchestrating her last adventure, he was essential. GP was the one organizing all the logistics, raising all the money, and booking the speaking tours that she was supposed to go on when she got back. But things got very tense between them before she left, and there were actually rumors that she was planning to divorce him.
I had not read about that. That's very gossipy. Do you think that she felt pressure to take this trip around the world?
Yeah, I think she felt terrible pressure for a bunch of reasons.
Why do you think that was? What do you think it represented for her?
Well, on a personal level, in 1937, flying around the world at the equator was really the ultimate challenge. No other pilots had done it. Others had flown around the world, but this was the longest route, and she really wanted to be the first person to fly it. She felt terrible pressure, though, for a number of reasons. The flight she disappeared on was actually her second attempt to fly around the world. The first attempt was 2 months earlier, and it had ended in a complete disaster. She originally planned to fly from east to west around the world, starting in California, but she had a horrible plane crash in Hawaii, where the undercarriage of her plane was completely sheared off, and the whole aircraft had to be taken apart and shipped back to Lockheed in California. It was really a catastrophe, but she definitely wanted to try again, despite the huge expense of all the repairs to her plane. She also had to redo all the very expensive logistics for the flight. Since she would be taking off again in May instead of March, as originally planned, she was going to be facing different weather conditions around the world. So she decided to reverse her direction and fly from west to east, starting in Florida. All those changes were incredibly expensive, and she and GP weren't rich, so they were under enormous financial pressure. And Amelia also needed to make this trip to keep her name in the news. She was in the hero business. She made her money by setting records and then publishing books and going on lucrative speaking tours about them. There was a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, I've read a lot that she planned this to be her quote-unquote final trip, although I just don't believe that. I don't believe someone who is in the hero business can just say, oh, well, I'm retiring from it.
Well, one interesting factor is that she suspected she was pregnant.
Oh.
And so her plan was that she confided to someone she knew that when she came back, she was going to live a relatively normal life. That was what was in her mind.
That's fascinating. So how difficult was it to maneuver the kind of plane that Amelia was flying those days?
Well, aviation had changed a lot since Amelia started flying. In the early days, many planes were made of wood, and they had canvas wings and rusty wires. They were just very dangerous and unstable. But planes gradually got better and more powerful. And by the time Amelia left on her last flight in 1937, she was piloting the best, fastest and first fully pressurized multi-engine airplane in the world. It was a state-of-the-art plane called the Lockheed Electra, and it was able to fly faster than 200 miles an hour with a top range of 4,000 miles. So it was a long way from the rickety contraptions they were flying in the early 20s. And to give you an idea of just how far aviation had progressed by then, the very first commercial planes flew over the Atlantic Ocean only days after Amelia disappeared. So in a real sense, her time as a hero pilot was ending because the world was moving on from adventure flying. It was becoming normalized.
I want to talk about after she crashes in Honolulu, and then she has Henry Manning subsequently leave from her flight team. Did Amelia have any second thoughts about going on this trip now that Manning, who was a very key figure in this crew, would no longer be taking it with her?
I don't think she had any second thoughts. In fact, I think the danger of it and all the obstacles even made it more attractive for her. She once wrote that doing things in spite of criticism is terrible difficulties made achievements even more thrilling for her. So she liked playing for the highest stakes. That's who she was. But as you mentioned, she told friends that this was going to be her last record-setting flight. And when she came back, she was going to live like a normal woman.
Right. Sounds like she was very determined. Do you think that she made the right call by choosing Fred Noonan as her then navigator?
That's an interesting question. On the plus side, Noonan was a famous airplane navigator, and he had already crossed the Pacific in a plane 18 times, although certainly not on the long routes that he was taking with Amelia. But on the negative side, he was known as a heavy drinker. And even though that made him risky, Amelia was confident that she could handle him, I think because her father had been an alcoholic, and so had been the pilot on her first flight across the Atlantic. So she felt that she could handle both of them, and she thought she could handle Noonan. She planned to watch him like a hawk. But as it turned out, he got completely blitzed the night before they were supposed to cross the Pacific. So she postponed the flight a day and made sure he was sober. But a bigger problem, which Amelia probably wasn't thinking about, was that Noonan, unlike Manning, didn't know Morse code. Mm. And neither did Amelia. Mm. That was a problem because in 1937, still, most ships and planes communicated exclusively in Morse code. Instead, Millie and Noonan were planning to communicate with ships and aircraft by voice radio alone. But the fact was their radio skills, too, were extremely weak. So bottom line, no, I don't think she made the right call choosing Noonan, although I'm not sure that Manning would have been the right choice either.
Oh, I mean, I had never put that two and two together, the correlation between her dad and Noonan and her really thinking that she could handle it. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. And it also is, I didn't know that her radio skills weren't as good as well.
I compare it to people who grew up using typewriters when the world shifted to personal computers. How that generation, some people in that generation were a bit slow on the uptake. And similarly, Amelia, I don't think, realized how critical those new skills were to her flight. And the reason is that when she first started flying, planes didn't have radios. When she flew across the Atlantic the first time in 1927, and she wanted to communicate a ship that they saw in the water below, what did she do? She wrote a note, she put it in a bag, stuffed a couple of oranges in it for ballast, and hurled it through the hatch of the plane, aiming for... That was plane to ship communication in 1927. And in that case, of course, she missed completely and it went far from the ship. That's what she knew when she started. And then the first time that she used radio on a major flight was when she flew solo from Oakland to Honolulu in 1935. Her plane had a radio telephone and she was able to stay in two-way communication with ships and shore stations during the flight. She even heard GP talking to her from a radio station in Honolulu. But in 1937, when she was getting ready for her last flight, the Electra's radio equipment was new and complicated and a little troublesome. They were having problems with it. And worse, Amelia only spent 1 hour of training in how to operate the new communication system. This is why it was like a generational shift, a technology shift. I don't think she really understood how crucial it was.
Wow.
And that was compounded by another, as it turned out, fatal mistake. She took the Morse code equipment off the plane because she wanted to reduce the weight. And she also took off a long radio antenna. So all in all, it was a scenario that was kind of ripe for disaster since they were relying on voice radio alone. They just didn't have the skills, they didn't have the equipment, and they didn't have the backup skills in Morse that would have enabled them to stay in contact with people who could tell them where they were and where they were going.
So what do you think her relationship was at this point with Noonan before she leaves? They spent 40 days traveling together and they're about to take off for the Howland Islands. What is this relationship like? You mentioned that he had already gotten drunk the night before they were supposed to leave.
Well, before that, especially in the early part of the trip, they had actually become pals. So Amelia was sitting in the pilot seat and Noonan was working in the back of the plane in the navigation area, and they would communicate with each other by passing notes clipped to a fishing pole. And sometimes he sat up with her in the cockpit, and he actually wrote to his wife that Amelia was what he called a grand person and the only woman flyer he would ever make that kind of trip with, because she could take hardships as well as a man, and she worked as hard as one. But things started to go south between them when they reached India. Amelia called GP from Calcutta to tell him that she was starting to have what she called personnel problems. And that was code for the fact that Noonan had started drinking. And then, of course, she got plastered the night before they were supposed to take off for Howland.
So how did they prepare for that trip? Because I'm assuming they knew it was going to be the most difficult leg of their journey. So what kind of preparations did they put into place?
Well, they involved the U.S. government. The government built an airstrip on Howland for them. They, enlisted all kinds of technical and expert help. And Amelia always liked to overprepare because that was her way of handling fear. But as I mentioned, she underprepared in one vital way. Communication technology had changed so much since she started flying, but she just didn't keep up with it, and she didn't pay as much attention to it as she should have.
It seems like a huge oversight. I mean, I guess hindsight is 20/20, right? But at the moment, it feels huge.
It was, and I think it was one of the fatal mistakes that led to her disappearance.
So in your opinion, what do you think happened to Amelia and Fred?
Well, I think in the end, really, it was their lack of radio skills and Morse code skills that doomed their flight and doomed them. They had radio problems in Darwin, Australia. And then when they left on their last leg to Howard Island, they had more problems. Amelia was able to send voice messages, but she didn't seem to be able to receive them. So she was never able to establish two-way communication during her flight, and that was a deadly problem. She sent her last radio transmission at 8:43 a.m. on July 2nd, 1937. After more than 20 hours in the air, there was very little fuel left in the plane. And as to what happened after that, there are two major schools of thought. One is the crashed and sank theory, that they ran out of fuel and ditched in the Pacific, sinking 17,000 feet to the bottom of the ocean. The other major theory is that she landed her plane on a coral island, which is now called Nikumaroro, and that they survived there for a while before dying from thirst, food, poisoning, injury, or infection. And I think there's strong circumstantial evidence for that theory. Although there's never been a smoking gun, one organization called the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery has done many expeditions out to that island, which was uninhabited when Amelia disappeared. They found a woman's personal items dating from the 1930s, and earlier witnesses found other evidence, including bones that may be consistent with Amelia's skeleton. I know that Amelia did practice landing her aircraft on a beach, and she told a friend that there were always lots of ships passing by islands in the Pacific. Of course, there weren't. But I think it's plausible that she chose to land her plane instead of ditching and drowning in the ocean.
Interesting. It definitely sounds logical. I mean, if I was Amelia, I think I'd try my best to do that. So am I assuming that if you had to pick something that was to blame for the disappearance of Amelia Earhart, what would that be? Would it be lack of communication?
Well, I think I put a number of things up on the board. I think I would definitely put GP up there. I think he definitely contributed to the tension and Amelia's inattention before she took off on that last flight. I'd also put up the hero business, the pressure on her to set records and then make money off them. There's no question that financial pressures factored into her decision to make that flight. I would also put up the U.S. Navy. After she disappeared, the Navy conducted the largest sea rescue ever attempted for a missing flyer. They covered 250,000 square miles in every direction around Howland Island. And in the course of that search, planes saw signs of recent human habitation on an island in the Phoenix Group where Nikumaroro is. But they never went back to check it out. And if Amelia was on that island, chances are that she was still alive when they made that flyover. Most of all, I think I would put Amelia herself up on the board, because she always prided herself on doing exactly what she wanted to do. And this fight, bottom line, was her decision. It was her own inattention to training a new radio technology that helped lead to her disappearance. She just wasn't as prepared as she should have been. But I think Amelia herself, who was always a fatalist, would put up on the board the man with a little black book, who, she said, has a date marked down for all of us when our work is done.
So you think she knew it was coming. It would eventually come in one of her adventures.
Yes, and she was prepared for it to come now. She asked a journalist before she took off what he thought her odds were of making it, and he said 50-50, and she agreed with him. And she said the one thing that she was really afraid of was growing old. So she took her chances, and she made her bet.
What do you think about putting up on the board the pressure of turning 40?
I don't know that 40 by itself was a number that would have scared her. I think 60, 70, 80 might have been. But I think she was, you know, it was such a dangerous occupation to be a flyer. I mean, from the very beginning, possibly especially in the very beginning, people were dying all the time in these flimsy little machines. So she always knew. And in fact, before she made her flight across the Atlantic in 1927, she wrote popping off letters to her mother and father that were very casual, saying, hey, you know, if I die, I die. But, you know, I did it doing what I wanted to do. This was who she was. It was her attitude. So I think Amelia would take it on herself.
Yeah, it sounds like she really took risks and she stood by them and was an inspiration as she, you know, well-deserved inspirational.
Yeah, and I think that if she were alive today, she would still be way ahead of her time.
Yes, yes. Well, Susan, thank you so, so much for talking to us today. And before we go, if you could just tell our listeners where they can go to find more information on your book, that would be great.
Sure. My book is called Amelia Earhart, The Thrill of It, and you can buy it online through it, one of those major book retailers.
Well, thank you so much, Susan.
You too. Great to talk, Rebecca.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hello, Rebecca.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
Now, what did you guys think about this, what Susan had to say about Amelia Earhart? First, right off the bat, we need to talk about her being pregnant?
Oh my God, bun in the oven in the plane.
Yeah, that was a true shock to me. Mm-hmm. I cannot believe it.
Me neither. And I know this is going to, you know, I can't say this because of sexism, but was
but here
was,
you go.
was mommy brain to blame?
Oh my God.
You are not the person to, you cannot put that up on the board.
Guys, I'm just kidding. If you would see me, you know I'm only joking around.
He's got his hands up in the air.
I'm
like,
not just
like
the fact
what?
Checker. I'm the fun checker.
Oh God.
No, that's.
But I got to say, it must have been very uncomfortable if she was pregnant to be traveling under those circumstances. I mean, I don't know. I've never been pregnant. I can't speak to it, but it just uncomfortable. Like you, a lot of my friends who are pregnant have to pee every, I don't know, half an hour. So
right, and they say the first trimester is the hardest.
Well, we don't know what trimester she was in.
Well, she wasn't showing, right?
That's true. That's
I don't
true.
Know. I mean, so, okay, sorry, just quick offshoot. What is the bathroom situation in a plane when you're doing sort of 20-hour
Good
stints?
Good question.
Well, those planes didn't have bathrooms.
Well, right. That's my point.
I think you go to the back. I think she probably had to be like, hey, Fred, can you hold the steering wheel? And then she goes to the back and pees, or she just has like a bottle that she pees into while she's driving the plane.
These are speculations.
Totally speculations.
I am now on DuckDuckGo and I typed in old plane pee. So I should get to the bottom of this. Uh-oh, I'm being directed to porn sites.
Chris.
Okay, so does Amelia Earhart possibly being pregnant, does that change our verdict?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that, if anything, she would have tried even harder, right? I don't think her pregnancy is what caused the disappearance, is all I'm saying.
But should it make us give her more or less of a break when it comes to her culpability? Or should it not affect it at all?
I think it probably shouldn't affect it at all. And especially because Susan really didn't focus too much on that. She brought up a lot of other good points that could be areas of focus, sort of like helping some of our cases. Like in particular, I would say the technology.
Yeah, that was
a big one. The shifting technology of planes and the bad timing and how she wasn't adapting to that technology.
Yeah, like her just doing like a 1 hour a tutorial on how to do a radio, you know, work the radio on the plane. That to me is like big faux pas. No,
yeah, I think so. It's actually it's really negligent in a way. And also the something else she said that didn't really hit home with me the first time we had this discussion about Amelia Earhart was how risky flying the equator really was. Because to me, I was like, oh, she's doing something people have done before. It's kind of old hat. But really, because she was flying the equator, it was the longest route. So it really was sort of a feat that no one had done before that had, you know, extra risk involved. So I don't think that really had sunk in with me until I heard it from her.
Right. And yes, exactly. And also the whole info and everything she was talking about with Noonan being a drunk too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're dealing with a pregnancy, if you're like, oh, that's on my mind, and there's like physical demands that, and then there's also like a drunk dude who like is in charge of you, like where the direction you're going in.
Yeah, that's
like,
really
that
annoying.
That's got to be weighing on you.
I thought what she said, something she said that was interesting was when she discussed how she thought she could control Noonan because of her past experience with her dad, right, also being an alcoholic. That to me was very interesting.
Yeah, definitely interesting. Yeah.
I think she got in over her head a little bit.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And it sounds like, you know, she was, and we kind of mentioned this in when we were talking about it, but she maybe felt like she was wanted to push through, even though maybe the trip at a certain point, due to Noonan's behavior, due to, you know, whatever, the Morse code thing should have been called off. But she, you know, for whatever external pressures, internal pressures, she didn't make the choice to call it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she also coined a term that I thought was really good, but I'm forgetting now. Was it called hero? Something hero?
Oh, yeah. The hero challenge.
Oh, darn. Should I look it up really quick?
Hashtag the hero challenge on Instagram. Everybody has to like climb a tree to say,
or is that Or is that when you and your like partner, she climbs over you and then she climbs through like under your legs and on top of you? That's, I think, the panda challenge.
That's the panda. Yeah, we got to figure out what the hero. The hero challenge is you fly around the world on the equator. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Really. But do it all while holding the Instagram live.
Yeah. Or like that car challenge where they get out of the car and dance next to the moving car. I wonder if they did that with planes.
I mean, they do. They used to strap people to the top of them. And
oh, that's true.
Is it called the hero cause complex?
She had some term for it.
Yeah, now we're forgetting it. But yeah, that you're saying that she would have gone above and beyond. Like nothing was going to stop her because she had this hero.
Right.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It was like she was
hero business, maybe?
She's in the hero business. She's in the hero business.
That's
right.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's interesting.
If you're in the hero business, then she had to do what she had to do. She had to keep upping her game.
Right. Exactly. It's like when you're a Kardashian, like you have to like make up drama so that like the tabloids still follow you around.
I thought you were going to say you have to wear makeup.
Or I was actually about to say you have to make a sex tape, but I but I diverted from that course. But you just have to they rely on I did, didn't I? No, plenty of Kardashians have not made a sex tape and are doing just fine.
That's so right, Chris.
But I just mean like, you know, the tabloids. You have to make splashy headlines, and that was the business she was in. She was in the hero business. I thought that was a really good term that Susan used.
I wish we had thought of that term because that would have looked really good on the board instead of publicity stunts.
Mm. Yeah, but it's sort of the same idea.
It is. So, are you like still that we sent publicity stunts? Do we all stand by that?
Yeah, I think hero business kind of encompasses it a little bit better, but. Really, it's the need for her to do a publicity stunt to continue on her hero business. So I think I still stand by it.
Yeah, I like it too.
And I think, unfortunately, I do think that she and Fred still should get the big slap.
Okay. I mean, there was a moment when I first heard she was pregnant that I sort of clutched my pearls and said, oh, what have we done? We've slapped a pregnant woman. But you know what? It has to be equal opportunity at The Alarmist. So we don't know how many of the people we've sent to jail have been pregnant.
Right.
It's possible.
I would say most of them are men, so I don't think any of them.
There's got to be a woman in there, right?
Yeah, I think if we really dig, I mean, we'd have to do a little bit of research, but we could probably find a woman.
Yeah, we did send the entire Texas prison system.
British government.
Publicity. There are women in publicity stunts, that's for sure.
That's true.
But I love that you are wearing your pearls even during quarantine.
Yes, that is.
I'm respectful. I'm in full pearls every day.
But again, that's speculation too. We don't know for a fact that she was pregnant. So
yeah, that's true.
So I think that settles it. We're sticking to our guns. Is that the term?
Yeah.
That's the proper term?
That is.
And we're not changing. We will not revoke publicity stunts.
No. Okay, the verdict stands.
That's right.
Great.
So, everyone, we're signing off.
Yeah. You want to tell them what we're doing next week? Real quick, if you guys want to reach out with your thoughts, you can email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail at 844-370-8643.
And please reach out to us with recommendations on tragedies that you think we should be covering. We want tragedies from all over the world. And Your recommendations have been really helpful, and we encourage them. And also follow us on Instagram at The Alarmist Podcast at Gmail. It's just at The Alarmist Podcast.
That would be funny if our Instagram handle was at The Alarmist. That was our email address. That actually would be good.
That's
sort of cross
promotion. Yeah. And follow us on Twitter at AlarmistThe. And of course, feel free to leave us a voicemail, right, Amanda?
Please, for the love of God, leave us a voicemail. And I have to say that we have been getting some nice ratings and reviews. We're still at 4 stars, which I'm not great at math, but people have been reviewing saying Amanda begging me to review finally broke me down. And so I'm just going to one more time do just like a quick beg. If you have a moment and you have the mental bandwidth right now, give us a little review, and it really helps the podcast, and we do read them all, and we love hearing from you. So if you got the time, take a beat, send us a 5-star review. Thank you very much.
Now I'll go home. Yes, they're very much appreciated. Okay, well, tune in next week. We're going to be discussing the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster. It's a big one, and we're going to be talking about it.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.